on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
All righty, guys, it is time for a new episode of the Auto Bid. That was my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the intro. Make sure you guys are tuning into his music. His new project, Why Stop Now, is out on all platforms. So if you have not already, make sure you go and stream my guy's music, man. He's one of the hottest young rappers out of the DMV, man. So make sure you guys tap in before it gets too late and he blows up on the music scene, man. Before we get into this episode, man, I want to remind you guys to make sure you guys are giving us a like, giving us a subscription on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you're finding our podcast. Just go ahead and give us a like, give us a 5-star rating, subscribe. Please, it goes a long way as we try to, you know, grow this podcast and get it out to the right people. Got a super jam-packed episode for you today, man. Obviously, the NCAA tournament concluded on Monday night with a classic. Kansas won their fourth national title in program history, just their first since 2008, and they defeated University of North Carolina in a classic on Monday night. We're going to dive into that game, dive into the NCAA tournament, man, give you guys one last little recap, our thoughts on the tournament, man. Then we're going to dive into our All Facts Media mid-major rankings as well, our last mid-major rankings of the season. And then, of course, we're going to dive into the coaching carousel, man. There's been a lot of movement across the college basketball landscape, SEC, Big East, Atlantic 10, Big 10. We're going to dive into the biggest openings here in the DMV area where me and Drew are from, Maryland and GW. Both of those programs turned over this offseason. So a lot to get to, man. But Drew, how you doing, my guy?
Doing all right, man. You know what I'm saying? It's April. Weather's starting to get a little nicer out here in Portugal, man. So, you know. Have no complaints.
Yeah, man. Look, the weather's starting to get a little nice over here, man. You know what I'm saying? It's getting ready to be hot boy summer over here in DMV, man. You see the cherry blossoms are starting to bloom. You know what I'm saying? Got a little bit of a glimpse of nice weather. So definitely looking forward to that, man. But as I said before, man, you got a lot to get to today. We're going to start off with our All Facts Media mid-major rankings, man. Drew and I were giving you rankings every week all season long. And obviously, we haven't had them in a few weeks because obviously with the NCAA tournament and the conference tournaments, we wanted to wait and see how all that shook out. But nonetheless, we have our final poll of the 2021-2022 season. So I'll go ahead and read those out to you. Of course, to no surprise, St. Peter's is the number one team in our poll to close the year. I mean, there's really only one right answer here as far as our poll, man. But the run that St. Peter's made, the historic run that they made all the way to the Elite Eight, beating Murray State, who was our second-ranked team in the tournament. Man, those two were you know, great all year. Obviously, Murray State was number one team in our poll for much of the season, but ended up running into the buzzsaw that was St. Peter's in the round of 32, and so St. Peter's overtook them for the number one spot. Then Richmond, all the way up to third in our ranking after they were able to win the A-10 tournament, and then get a win over Iowa in the first round of that NCAA tournament. The Spiders, man, were a surprise team come March, man. They were able to turn some heads, man. Obviously, those seniors, Grant Golden, Jacob Gilliard, Nathan Kayo, and Nick Sherrod, were able to go out on a good note, man. So they are number three in our poll. And number four, New Mexico State Aggies, man. They were able to get a win over UConn in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Teddy Buckets, as he's being called, had an outstanding game, and he turned a lot of heads. Obviously, he's a guy who's no stranger to that level of basketball coming from Nebraska. Last season, man, he's somebody who surely is no stranger to that level of play. So those were the four mid-majors that were able to get wins in the NCAA tournament, or at least in the first round of the tournament. There were some teams that got wins in the play-in on the back half of our rankings. But five, Boise State, the Mountain West, regular season and tournament champion. Six, we got St. Mary's. Seven, Davidson, the A-10 regular season champions. Eight, we got San Diego State. Nine, South Dakota State, the Summer League champions, who almost upset Providence, but obviously Ed Cooley and those Friars were able to use their luck to get past South Dakota State in the first round of that NCAA tournament. Number 10, Colorado State had a great year out of the Mountain West. Obviously, we have four Mountain West teams in our poll to end the year, which was the most of any conference. Number 11, we got San Francisco. That was a great first round game between them and Murray State, man. I called it a little bit of that game. I know Drew watched a lot of that one, man. And two of the best mid-major teams in the country. The shame we had to play in the first round of the tournament, man, but it ended up being a great game to watch for all the viewers. Number 12, UAB, the conference tournament champions out of Conference USA, man. They were able to overtake.
Texas won the
regular season, and then UAB was able to win the conference tournament, man, keeping North Texas out of the dance, man, because they were high in our rankings all year, man. Me and you took some slack for not having them in our top 25 for my guy, Alante Holston, man. Shout out to him, man, DMV guy. He played North Texas, man, but they folded, man. They folded under pressure, man. When it mattered most, they ain't get it done, man. UAB was able to win the Conference USA, and so they earned the 12th ranking in our final mid-major poll. Number 13, Loyola Chicago, man. They went out sad, man, versus Illinois, man. They really did, man. I hate to say it because, you know, they were a team that had a lot of problems coming to this year, man. But what did it score? I think it was 41 points.
41, something like that.
In that first round game, I mean, it was absolutely atrocious, the performance that they put on against Illinois, man. So that left a little bit of a sour taste in our mouth. So they get the 13th spot in our final poll. 14 is Chattanooga, the SoCon champions, who played a great game for Illinois but weren't able to get the W. Obviously, they had that Cinderella shot, David Jean Baptiste, to defeat Furman in the SoCon championship. They come in at number 14 in our record. Number 15 is Wyoming, man, the fourth and final team from the Mountain West in our poll. They had a great season this year. Obviously, they lost to Indiana in a thriller in the playing around in the NCAA tournament, man. But nonetheless, great season for Wyoming. Definitely became a big fan of those guys this year. 16, Vermont out of the American East, man. They were absolutely, you know, on fire whole year. Steamrolled their way through the American East. Couldn't get past Arkansas in the tournament. 17, we have the CAA champion, Delaware Blue Hens. And they actually, this morning, saw Andrew Carr enter the transfer portal for Delaware, man, which was a shocker for me because, you know, he was somebody that would have had a huge role next year. Obviously, they're losing Dylan Painter to graduation. And it was going to really be him and Jair Davis. You know, those two are going to be, you know, the 4-5 punch for Delaware, man. So I already know what went on there. And maybe he got some people in his ear, but that's going to be a big loss for Delaware, losing him and Dylan Painter off the next season. So definitely wanted to point that out. Number 18, Akron. We had a bunch of teams from the other MAC, the MAC, in our poll, man, from Ohio to Toledo to Kent State. And it ends up being the Akron Zips who come out on top of that conference and make NCAA tournament. So kudos to them. They're number 18 in our last mid-major poll. Number 19 is going to be Georgia State, man. They also made a little bit of a run late in the year, got healthy. And they're a team that got underseeded, man. They ended up getting the 16th seed after winning the Sun Belt Championship. But they gave Gonzaga a run for their money, man, in that round of 64, man. So definitely kudos to them for the job that they did this season. And their coach ended up taking the job at SMU. I don't know why I'm blanking on his name right now. It's going to come to me at one. It's going to come to me.
I'm putting on it right now, too.
Rob Lanier. I'm blanking on his name, man. But he took SMU job. Drew, if you can find that out for me, you know, by the end of the time we get to the bottom of these rankings, we'll definitely swing back to that. 20 was Colgate, the winners of the Patriot League. 21 was Wright State out of the Horizon League.
Rob Lanier. Absolutely.
Rob Lanier, right? That's what I figured. Well, yeah. Rob Lanier obviously ended up taking the SMU job out of Georgia State. 20, we said Colgate. 21, Wright State out of the Horizon League. 22, the MEAC champions, Norfolk State. 23, Texas Southern out of the SWAC. 24, Longwood out of the Big South. They had an outstanding year over at Longwood, man. So definitely kudos to them. And 25, Montana State, the Big Sky champions, man, is going to round out our mid-major top 25. That was a lot, but you know, they definitely want to give a shout out to a lot of those teams. Also, want to shout out Bryant, who just on the outside of our poll, man. They made the tournament out of the NEC, lost in the playing around. Also, Texas A&M, Corpus Christi. Those were two teams that ended up making the tournament, but didn't end up making our top 25 rankings. Also, Yale out of the Ivy League, whatever team that was in conversation, obviously made the tournament, but didn't make the rankings for us. And then Jacksonville State obviously made the tournament, but you know, out of that, the same conference as Bellarmine, out of the Atlantic Sun, obviously Bellarmine was able to win the conference tournament. But they didn't get the bid to the dance because Jacksonville State was a regular season champion. So they as well fit the bill, but you know, neither of those teams ended up making the cut, man. It's a tight list, man. Drew and I received, you know, a lot of comments from a lot of teams that, oh, North Texas or oh, Iona, or you know, why aren't these teams making it? And it's like, man, look, what did you do in March, man? What did you do when the lights was on brightest? You know what I'm saying? When them cameras were shining, you missed your one shining moment, man. You fumbled that bag when it mattered most, man. We ain't rewarding that over here at All Facts Media, man. We need winners, man. It's winning time over here at All Facts Media. We reward the winners with our rankings.
Facts, man. I mean, shoot, we killed Lower Chicago for putting up a 41 special versus Ohio State. And no, Texas, man, I mean, shoot, they only scored 36 points versus Louisiana Tech in the semifinals of the conference tournament. So, I mean, like I said, my guy, Tay, man, you know what I'm saying? I love North Texas. We showed them a lot of love this year, man. But you scored 36 points with season on the line, you can't be ranked in the top 25 here at All Facts Media, man. 36 points is not cutting it, man. Sorry.
Yeah, man. So anybody who's interested and their team didn't make it, man, you can go ahead and hit us up on Twitter, and we'll gladly tell you why your team did not make the cut in this year's rankings. But the NCAA tournament, man, obviously we had a hell of a Final Four, man. Arguably the best Final Four that we've had maybe in the history of the NCAA tournament, man, but certainly in a very long time with obviously Duke and Carolina in that historic matchup in the Final Four. And then obviously Kansas and Villanova, heartbreak for Justin Moore, DMV kid. Torn Achilles, couldn't play in that matchup versus Kansas, man. And Kansas obviously was able to beat Villanova in that first semifinal. And then Carolina, man, was able to shock the Duke Blue Devils and Coach K's career, send that man up the road, man, and then advance to the title game, man. So what were your takeaways from those two games, Drew?
Man, I'm just befuddled that Duke actually let Carolina beat them. I mean, I'm thinking, they beat you guys in the final game at Cameron Indoor Stadium. There's no possible way that they're going to lose in the Final Four. Like, I bet $50 on this game, man. You know what I'm saying? Lost my $50 because I was so confident in Duke, man. And I was getting ready to bet more, too. I'm glad I showed some restraint. I might have went broke, man. But I'm just – I mean, that was definitely the most shocking result, man. Then to follow that up in the championship game, North Carolina then blows the largest lead in NCAA championship game history. It blew a 16-point lead to Kansas, man. I mean, they literally just blew their load trying to beat Duke. And then the next day, forgot how to play basketball in the second 20 minutes of that game. You know what I'm saying? So it's unfortunate. You know what I'm saying? I honestly think that if Duke wins that game, I think that they ended up beating Kansas and winning the national championship. You know, that's how I think it was shaken out. I also think, to be honest, if Justin Moore doesn't tear his Achilles, I think Villanova ends up beating Kansas. I mean, that was like I think 3 or 4 point game coming down the stretch there, and they didn't even have Justin Moore, you know. So
it was a 6 point game with a little more than 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, so a 2-possession game.
Like, you know, I would say it was 5:55 to play, and it was
a six-point game with 5 minutes left. I mean, I think if they had Justin Moore in that game, I think Villanova wins that. You know, we potentially can get a Villanova Duke national title game, man, which would have been definitely would have been a great game, man. But you know, the Final Four was definitely definitely delivered, man. I'm happy that, you know, Kansas was able to get one, because you know, I think over the last couple of years, man, Kansas kind of just, like, I won't say they fell off, but like people kind of forgotten about them, man, amongst the Blue Bloods, man. They've got upset in the tournament a lot. They haven't won since that 08 one, you know, with Mario Chalmers and the infamous missed free throws from Derrick Rose and the Memphis Tigers, you know, that in that championship game all the way back in 08 with Coach Cal. You know, here we are, you know, 14 years later, and they're, you know, Bill Self gets the second national title, man. So, you know, granted, it was, you know, heartbreak for Hubert Davis and UNC in that game, man. You know, my heart goes out to those guys, but I think that it was good for Kansas. I think it was good for college basketball that Kansas won one and kind of can reestablish themselves as a blue blood, you know, at the top of college basketball.
You know, for sure, man. I mean, it's first of all, it's crazy, man. That game was 14 years ago. I remember watching that game when it happened. Like, and I'm like, we were 12 years old, I want to say, at that time. And now we're 11, because it was in March. So 11 years old. And now obviously we're here 25, going on 26 in June, man. It seems like it was forever ago, man. But, you know, time is flying. But I told y'all this in the chat, man. Kansas, I mean, Carolina, I don't say they didn't care about the game. They wanted to win the championship game, for sure. They wanted to win that game. Nobody would ever go out and play a national championship game and want to lose. But that game versus Duke was their Super Bowl. That game for them, that game versus Duke is the biggest game they would ever play in their lives. There's no bigger game. There's no bigger moment had an opportunity to retire the best coach in the history of college basketball, and they did that. Not only that, it was your rival, and it's in the Final Four in front of 70,000 people. Like, it doesn't get any more bigger than that. You know why? It's crazy because my obviously on 68, we got Shamar Williams, UNC great, one of the best guards ever played there. Was asked, quote, word for word, if you could have this game on Saturday night or the championship on Monday, which one would you rather have? He said the win on Saturday over Duke. That's coming from one of the best guards ever played at the school, man. And then listen, they had Hansborough on there. They had two other guys. I can't remember their name. Forgive me, but the two other guys that played in Carolina. Yeah, man. Like they were co-signing. I'm like, yo, like they don't care about that game. And then they listen. Look, the ratings for that Kansas North Carolina game was the most watched championship game in history. It was 18.1 million viewers. The Duke Carolina game. 18.5 million viewers, man. The Duke Carolina game had more viewers than the championship game. That game was the Super Bowl, man. Like, that game was bigger. There would never be a game that Caleb Love and Andre Davis will play bigger than that Duke Carolina game. And you mentioned, man, they blew their load because they went 10 for 41 in the championship game between the two of them, man. I mean, freaking Caleb Love was 5 for 24 and RJ was 5 for 17. Like, and this is after on the heels of Caleb Love going 11 of 20 for 28 points, and RJ going for 6 for 13 for 18 points. So both of those guys, man, they threw a two hype for that Duke game. They got the win, and it is what it is, man. At the end of the day, I guarantee you they at home, like, you know what? We retired Coach K, and they will forever be able to say that. And I guarantee you, if they had a chance, they had to choose, they would probably take that win on Saturday over the win on Monday.
The players would 100% not rather have a loss in that championship game than a win over Duke. I guarantee you, if you ask Caleb Love, RJ Davis, Baycott, Brady Manick, if you ask all them guys, I guarantee you that those dudes would 100% rather have a national title than a win over Duke in the Final Four. I would bet $1 million on that. 1 million.
Listen, man, the alumni already stamped it. The people that wore that Carolina blue jersey, man, they don't care about that. They don't care about that, man. That rivalry runs way deeper than
that. Ask the players.
Hey, man, listen, we might have to track down Armando Baycott, man. He's a DMV guy. I might got to catch him somewhere down here in the summertime and ask him what's up, man. Because obviously, there's a whole bunch of trash talking throughout the year between them and Duke, man. I must say, I really thoroughly enjoyed it, you know what I'm saying? So sad that came to an end. And listen, man, but for Duke, you're on to a new chapter now, man. John Shire is taking over the program, man. Obviously, he's going to be under a lot of pressure, man, and a lot because of what Hubert Davis did this year, man, going to a natty in year one. And Lord, God forbid, if Hubert would have won that thing, they would have been looking at Shire like, what you going to do? You see what he did now? What you going to do? So he better be lucky that Hubert didn't win it, man. But nonetheless, to go to a Final Four national championship game in year one, people are going to be looking at Shire the next year. He has a great recruiting class, three of the top five players in the country. He has six top 100 freshmen coming in. I believe five of them are in the top 50 of ESPN top 100, man. So they're going to be under some pressure next year, man. You're definitely going to lose Ben Carroll. You'll probably lose AJ Griffin, one or more as well. Probably lose Mark Williams. We're anticipating that Jeremy Roach and Trevor Kidd both come back. You add that with the freshmen that are going to bring in, like, they're going to have a pretty good team next year. So, I mean, the expectations are going to be pretty high. I mean, what are your thoughts on, you know, I guess the direction of this Duke program as far as where it stands now?
I mean, I think it's going to be tough, one, because obviously, you know, Coach K's gone and that whole aura over the program is going to be completely different. But then you also lose Nolan Smith, you know, who is going to Louisville. He's going to be the associate head coach over there, has obviously strong ties to the DMV area. We know DMV has been a Duke pipeline over the couple of years. Obviously, we know about Roach and Kills and Quinn Cook. The list goes on and on about, you know, Nolan Smith himself, obviously. There's been a bunch of DMV guys that have went to Duke, man. And, you know, for him to go to Louisville and they're in the ACC with Duke, I mean, that's definitely something to monitor going forward as far as recruits. I think also, man, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see, man. Like, you know, it's different when you're when you're on the bench and learning from the guy, but it's different to step in them shoes. And actually, now you have to be the guy. But I think he'll be meant for, man. But I think I'm also interested in to see what Hubert Davis does next year. Because, I mean, quite frankly, I mean, all these guys were Roy Williams guys. You know, so I'm interested to see what he does kind of going forward here, if he can recruit. I mean, we all saw Kevin Ollie won national title with Jim Calhoun's guys. After he played Jim Calhoun, everybody was singing his praises, and then he never got back ever, you know, after that. And obviously, we know how that story ended over there at UConn. So I think Hubert Davis is going to have to show, like, even obviously in his first year, you were able to kind of put it together and make it all the way to the championship game. You know, what can you do in these next couple of years? Are you going to be able to maintain this success? Can you recruit at that level? You know, so I think that that's also something to monitor going forward as well.
Yeah, well, look, I think if anything, they're going to have some momentum based off what they just did in the tournament this year. Man, looking at the ESPN 100 right now, they have a guy coming in, Jalen Washington, 30th ranked player in the country. He's a center. He signed to Carolina. They have a number 45th ranked player, Seth Trimble. He's committed to Carolina, 6'1 point guard. So they got two top 50 guys coming in.
You just said 30 and 45, and Duke's got three out of the top five. I mean,
of course. Listen,
that's tough.
They also got a guy, Tyron Nickel. He's 96, but, you know, four-star guy, power forward. So, look, they got some freshmen coming in. Obviously, we don't know. Obviously, it ain't Duke with three of the top five. But you have this thing called the portal, baby. That portal is going to be rocking. Obviously, this year, it's kind of been a slow year so far. We haven't really seen, you know, any heavy hitters. Obviously, last year, we saw Marcus Carr in the portal and Kellen Grady in the portal. And there were some heavy hitters that were transferring school. Trey Mitchell.
I was in this. Brady Manick was the best portal out of any player in the country. I mean, he averaged his career high in points, 15 points per game, and was a key, arguably was one of the best players in the NCAA tournament run this year.
Oh, do you want to know who was the best player?
Are you talking about Oscar Tshiebwe? Are you going to say Tshiebwe?
No, I wasn't even going to say Tshiebwe. Tshiebwe was player of the year, and he should be in the running as well. But I mean,
I think they made it to the national championship game, and he was an impact starter. Like, you know what I'm saying? He's one of those guys that was contributing at a high level on a team that was one possession away from winning the national championship game.
I think Alonis Williams will have a word. He averaged 19.
Not taking him over Manic.
And five. Excuse me?
Not over Manic.
Damn near one player of the year in the ACC in the same league as Brady Manic. Brady Manic
was the national championship.
He was a great addition, but you can't – the best addition. Like, I don't know about that one.
Yes.
I don't know about that one, man. He made the most impact
out of any transfer. Last year, Baycott was at UNC last year. Cabe Love was there last year. RJ Davis was there last year. Leaky Black was there last year. All those guys were there at UNC last year, and they were terrible. They didn't even make the tournament. This year, you take that same roster, you add Brady Manick, and they're in a national championship.
They also have a new coach, a new system. Like, it's not like just Brady Manick.
It's one of the same stuff. He was on
no,
the
it ain't. Win. No, it's not. What? The same thing. No, it's not.
What have you ever seen?
We've watched Carolina for years and years and years. They've always played these two stiff bigs. They want to come and throw it in to Hansborough, throw it in to Zeller, throw it in to John Henson, and play two
in the Baycott. That's Baycott.
But Brady Manning is a stretch four, bro. That was Hubert. And look. Wait,
exactly. Also, he changed the dynamic of the offense.
What have you? That was Hubert. Hubert recruited him. Hubert. I lied to you.
Obviously.
Listen. But he changed. It's Brady. It's Hubert had a huge part in that. And
the offense.
What have you ever? Come out.
Come out. Running the transition. It's the same.
It's not the same system, bro. Listen. I listened to Carolina players on the Field 68. Shout out Rob Dawson, Jeff Goodman. All week long, they had, like I said, Shamar Williams, Tyler Hansborough. Yo, they're all them dudes watching Caleb Love. They're like, yo, bro, Roy would have never let none of that rock. All them step backs, ball screen threes, none of them dudes was doing that, bro. Like, he never let none of their guards rock. How he let Caleb Love rock? He really let them dudes go, bro. Like, all their guards, Brady Manning, he gave them a freedom that Roy never gave them, bro. Ever. Ever.
All that can be true, but like I said, the players, it's literally the same exact team. You add Brady.
It's a whole new coach. Hey, man, I'm a Hubert Davis stan now. I wasn't, but I'm a Hubert Davis stan now. Oh. My man turned that thing around, bro.
You can say all that stuff about the coach. It was the same team, and they add one dude, and they're exponentially
better. They had a new coach.
Exponentially.
They had a new coach.
Man, you had
this man averaged 15, 6, and 2. You want to know what Alonis Williams averaged?
Made the national championship
you
game.
Want to know what Alonis Williams averaged?
Yo, Alonis
needs 19, 6 rebounds, 5 assists.
They didn't even make a tournament.
Huh?
They won the NIT.
It don't matter.
He had the biggest impact.
Yo, My man Steve Fulton, he went from averaging 6 points per game, bro. He averaged 6 points per game last year at Oklahoma. Took him in the, now he averages 19 a game. Best portal take all year. Alonis Williams, best getting the portal. Not even close. Wake Forest was doo-doo last year, bro. They were doo-doo.
He didn't make the tournament. His team went from not making the tournament to being in the national title game, bringing in one dude.
It wasn't just Brady Manning, though, bro. It wasn't just him. All them dudes got better. Love got better. Andre Davis got better. Big guy got better. They had a new coach.
Manic, but like you said, Manic being able to space the floor and pick and pop. And
that was Hubert.
Changed their offense.
He recruited him. Recruited Brady Manic.
Hubert's not making no shots.
Manic is my point, though.
I'm not taking that away. I'm saying Brady Manic's performance, his play, the way he changed the dynamic of how they played, allowed them to take their team to the next level. And the impact that he had, literally is the greatest out of any guy in the portal. Anybody.
I'm not jacking it. I'm going Lonis Williams. My man damn near won it. Who is that winning player in the ACC? Was it Buddy Boeheim?
No. I don't know. It was Lonis. I think he won it. Didn't he win it?
I don't think he won it. I think Buddy might have won it.
No, I think Lonis Williams won it. Buddy didn't win it. Buddy Boeheim definitely didn't win it.
I don't think it was. I don't think.
No, I'm pretty sure Lonis Williams won it. Well,
if he did, then that just kills your argument right there, buddy. Oh yeah, Alonis Williams won Player of the Year.
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, your argument.
That's the biggest impact transfer.
He went from 6 points a game to ACC Player of the Year once.
He didn't make the tournament. Brady Manning had the best impact out of any transfer in the portal.
Cap, how you say he had a bigger year impact than the man who won Player of the Year in the same league he's in?
Tournament to the national championship game.
Man, I ain't hearing that. Literally. Guess what? They both came from Oklahoma. And guess what? One won Player of the Year. One did it.
So what? It doesn't mean anything.
It does. It means he had a bigger impact.
No, it doesn't. This team didn't make the tournament.
Listen, man, we can agree to disagree. We'll go ahead and put a bow on that chapter. We'll have to see what Hubert does next year, see what Shire does next year. It'll be a lot of fun to watch. One thing I know for damn sure is that Carolina got the one-up on the rivalry for at least about good 10 years.
Yeah, Duke might got to run off like, I don't know, 10, 20. 10,
they got to run off like 20 straight wins before they can say anything to Carolina. Yo, all right, man. On to the next one, man. From one improbable tournament run in Carolina to another one, man. And the darlings of March, man. We would be remiss if we did not mention the St. Peter's Peacocks, man, and their improbable run all the way to the Elite Eight. The first MAC team to win a game in the tournament. The first MAC team to reach the Sweet 16, the first MAC team to reach an Elite Eight, the first 15 seed ever to reach an Elite Eight. I mean, there just aren't enough words to describe how absolutely insane this run was by St. Peter's. They beat Kentucky, who a lot of people had winning the whole damn thing in the first round of the NCAA tournament. The National Player of the Year in Oscar Tshiebwe took them out in the first round, then beat Murray State, who had the best record of any team in college basketball this year. I want to say they were like 30-2 or something like that, but they had the best record of any team in college basketball this year. Knocked them out in the second round. Then they beat Purdue, and just Jaden Ivey is going to be a top three pick. Zach Edey is the second coming of Yao Ming. Travion Williams was an All Big Ten player last year. I mean, I can't want to show that they were the worst possible matchup for St. Peter's, man. Nonetheless, they found a way to win, man. And then they ran into the buzzsaw that was Hubert Davis in North Carolina, man. And I mean, look, as someone who played in the MAC, it is absolutely unbelievable to even fathom what went down. Like, obviously, we're more than a week past, you know, them losing the tournament. I still can't believe, like, that they made it as far as they did. Like, it's actually kind of ridiculous, you know, the run that they made, man. And, you know, all credit to Shai Holloway, man, and, you know, for the job that he was able to do. And he's obviously been rewarded with the job at Seton Hall, man. But how about that run by St. Peter's, man? I mean, just what can you make of that run, man?
I mean, I think obviously, like you mentioned, this is the first for teams in the MAC and for St. Peter's University, obviously. I think this will be the first and the last time we ever see a run like this by a school like St. Peter's, man. I mean, I think that the thing that is just so hard to believe is like you said, man, from playing in the MAC and having to go to St. Peter's for 4 years, seeing the gym, seeing the facilities, seeing the campus, seeing the city around the school, and then being able to see, like, yo, like, this team, this school made the sweet, no, I'm sorry, the Elite Eight. Like, it's almost unfathomable. I mean, like,
but also, listen to this. If you haven't, if you're anywhere regional from like Philly, Jersey, New York, please just put it in your GPS and just go take a stroll past the university and just go walk around. You'd be like, yo, where am I? Am I at a community college? Like, what is this?
I mean, Sha Holloway is literally like a magician for being able to pull off what he was able to pull off, man. And I mean, it's literally improbable. Like I said, I tweeted right after they ended up losing. Like, this is the greatest Cinderella run that we've ever seen. Like, and I mean, obviously we've seen mid-majors make it even farther than they did. Obviously George Mason and VCU, Wichita State, Will Chicago, they all made Final Four runs, out of mid-major conferences. But I think this is even more improbable run. First of all, because of their seed, they were a 15 seed. And this is the first 15 seed to ever advance to the Elite Eight, first of all. And second of all, just like I said, the school and the university in and of itself. This isn't Iona, right? Like, this is a Iona team, with Rick Pitino coming out of the MAC, and they made it a run to the Elite Eight. I'm like, you know what? It's improbable, but it's Pitino. It's Iona. They've been in the tournament every single year for the last, I don't know how many years. It wouldn't be that surprising to me. This was, even a team like Monmouth. I mean, King Rice, and they've had great teams in the past. Their facilities is great. University is heavily invested in the sports. Siena, even great basketball history. Like, this is St. Peter's. Like, St. Peter's doesn't have the same history as any of these schools. So for Sha Holloway to even do what he did, especially with the guys that he has on his roster, I mean, he doesn't have any highly touted guys on his roster. I mean, even like I said, if you look at Iona, they got Tyson Jolly, I made a transfer, Elijah Joyner, man, and Nelly June Joseph are, I mean, first team all MAC guys. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't even know if they had a guy on first team. They didn't have any guys on first team all MAC. Casey Defo made second team, I believe, this year. I know there was a big beef about how he didn't end up on first team all MAC. I mean, they had a bunch of guys that were just scrappy, and his team really embodied his attitude, just, toughness, don't care about who they're playing, and that carried them in the tournament, man. So, I mean, hats off to what he's able to do, man. I think if he's able to make that kind of run at St. Peter's, it's going to be crazy to see what he can do at Seton Hall, man. And the guy that he's going to be able to coach there, I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, no, you mentioned the guys he had on the roster, man. And actually, three of those guys are now in the portal. And Doug Eater, the darling of March, I mean, his Instagram grew more than Paige Becker's in the tournament, man. I mean, I think he had the highest grossing Instagram and all of college basketball. He went from like having like 1,000 followers to having like 158K or something crazy like that. I mean, that dude, talk about running up a bag. I mean, that man really cemented his whole situation right now. And he's obviously in the portal now. Daryl Banks, who was obviously probably their best guard, he's in the transfer portal. And Matthew Lee is also in the transfer portal. Obviously, he was a starting point guard now on that team. So those three are going to be looking for new homes, and we're going to obviously be able to have to see where they land. Obviously, there was a rumor that one of them could be following Cha Holloway to St. Peter's. If it was one of the three, it had to be Daryl Banks. He was the leading scorer on the team, their best guard. And obviously, he's somebody that could potentially make an impact in the Big East. I was thinking if it was going to be anybody, it would be Casey Nadefo. He only played 4 years. He has another year of eligibility. I'm thinking if it was going to be anybody, he was the defensive player of the year in the MAC, I believe maybe two times, and defensive player of the year.
Three times defensive player of the year
in the MAC. And obviously, he's somebody who I think would be great in the Big East. 6'7", elite shot blocker, elite defensive player. A little bit undersized, but like I mentioned, the Big East is in a league where you're going to be going up against, 7-footers all the time and whatnot. You're going to be able to compete at that level. So if Nadefo is not going to, follow him to St. Peter's, to Seton Hall, then I guess it would have to be Banks if the rumors were true, because I don't want to speculate. And all three of those guys could, should be able to find somewhere else, some good landing spots. So, we'll see what happens with those guys, man. But I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Casey even. I mean, maybe if I'm, he might mess around and try to go pro, after this Elite Eight run. I mean, he's definitely in a great spot to make some money. So, I'm also interested to see who gets the St. Peter job, because also obviously there are rumors that Grant Billmeyer, who's been at Seton Hall with Kevin Willard for a long time, could potentially be have some interest in that job. But obviously he's now headed to Maryland with Willard, so we'll keep tabs on that situation. But it'll be interesting to see what happens from here with St. Peter's, man, because obviously Patino's still in the MAC. You know, you got obviously Shot Holloway is gone. And, you know, part of me just feels bad for the university because I'm like, damn, man, like they get all the history and then everybody just rolls out. But I mean, look, the money, the recognition, the attention that university got, man, is going to be felt for years and years and years and years to come. Like the you can't even, I'm sure, like the AD, you can't be bitter about Shot Holloway leaving. I mean, that dude brought more attention and more made that school more money than probably anybody in history that school has. And, you know, the ripple effects of that will be felt. I mean, I'm sure they're going to be able to hopefully build some better facilities. I mean, I know they renovated the gym this year, but, you know, they might be able to get some more renovations in, you know, after this run. So, you know, the university should be in great shape moving forward, and definitely going to be interested to see, you know, what happens with that moving forward.
Now, for sure, man. Like, I was feeling the same way, man. It's like the players are rolling out, the coaches are rolling out. So, like, you hate to see the school go from being in the Elite Eight to then, you know, being a bottom tier MAC team, you know. So I'm hoping that whoever they're getting there, hopefully, I mean, I think the best move will honestly be to try to, if they're not going to hire Bill Meyer from Seton Hall, I think the best move will honestly just be to promote somebody from within that has a relationship with the players that maybe they trust. And, you know, hopefully he can get some guys to stay. Look, kind of just.
The thing is, he has Umar Shannon and Rasheen Davis on the staff. So, like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Rasheen has been an assistant for forever. I know he would probably love opportunity to be head coach. He's has familiarity, you know, in the league, obviously having coached at Manhattan and won two championships with Steve Masiello. Then obviously Umar Shannon played at Quinnipiac, and he only played 1 year in the MAC. The first year Quinnipiac was ever in the MAC. But obviously those are both two guys that are familiar with the league. I think obviously Rasheen will have a better shot at getting the head coaching job, you know. And I'm not familiar with who the third person on the staff is, so forgive me for not being privy to that information. But, you know, I'm sure whoever the third person is will probably have a shout at that as well for that job. But nonetheless, man, you mentioned it, man. Hopefully they can get that rolling and, you know, get somebody in place that will continue to elevate that program and continue to, you know, to continue the history that Shot Holloway made this year, man. But obviously we mentioned Shot Holloway going to Seton Hall, man, and he was not the only school in the Big East or all around the country that hired a new head coach this spring, man. The coaching carousel was on and popping this season, man. There were a number of schools that got new head coaches, man. Obviously, in the Big East alone, Xavier was able to hire Sean Miller, who has been working with the Field of 68 all year, man. So definitely cool snap. I think it's an outstanding hire bringing Sean Miller back. He was obviously at the university for a long period of time back when they were in the A-10 years back and did a great job there. And then also, obviously, this is just happened a couple of days ago. Butler hired Thad Matta from former Ohio State coach, man. So, you know, definitely an interesting hire. Thad Matta he's had his share of health issues, obviously, which is the reason why he stepped down at Ohio State. But, you know, the rumor is that he's healthy, he's feeling good about himself, and, you know, obviously we'll be able to see what happens, what he's able to do with that Butler program, who was, you know, falling on some rough time lately in the coming years, and then, had to move in the A-10. Obviously, Sean Miller's brother, Archie Miller, was able to get the URI job, and Frank Martin was able to take over at UMass. So two of the local school, two of the New England schools up there were able to get new head coaches. Another school in the A-10, obviously GW, where they would hire Chris Caputo, a longtime Miami head coach, Miami associate head coach, been with Jim Larrañaga forever, was with Larrañaga at George Mason when they made their improbable run in the Final Four. So he's going to be able to come home back to GW, man, try to turn that program around. Another big program in the area, University of Maryland, hired Kevin Willard, former Seton Hall head coach, driving down 95, took over at the University of Maryland. And then half the SEC flipped. I mean, they were openings all over the place. Todd Golden gets Florida. Matt McMahon gets LSU. Lamont Paris gets South Carolina. Chris Jans gets Mississippi State. Dennis Gates gets Missouri. Mike White leaps from Florida to go to Georgia. And then obviously, you know, I mentioned obviously Florida ended up hiring Ty Golden to replace him. So I believe there were six openings in the SEC, man. They all got filled. So a lot of moves, man. A lot of moves, a lot of movement in the coaching carousel, man. And, you know, out of those ones that I just, you know, named off, obviously we're going to dive into Maryland GW, you know, specifically a little bit later. But out of the other ones, man, I mean, which moves do you think are going to turn out being the best, man? I mean, what are your thoughts on the other moves that were made in the coaching carousel?
Yeah, I mean, there were – I'm sure there might be even more, man, but I know that I think the most intriguing headline for me was there were three coaches that returned to schools that they had previously coached. Obviously, in Thad Matta returning to Butler, a school that he coached back in 2001.
But they went to the Horizon League.
Yeah. And obviously, he's also a Butler alum. Like you mentioned, Sean Miller returning to Xavier. Now they're in the Big East. Previously, they were in A-10. And then Steve Prohm coming back to Murray State. Obviously, now they're in the Missouri Valley Conference. So, I mean, I think it's interesting, man, to see these coaches that are leaving these schools and then the schools kind of coming back like, hey, saying that, you know, hey, boo, remember me? Text, you know. Hiring those guys back. So I think those are going to be – I think those were kind of the three most interesting hires to me, just seeing those three kind of return to kind of familiar stomping grounds, kind of just familiar territory. The one I'm looking at the most, man, is Archie Miller going to URI. I think that's going to be an interesting hire, man. A lot of people were saying, you know, I thought that they were going to – Archie Miller was going to kind of hold out a little bit, a little rumblings that he might take the NC State job if that would ever come over in a year or two. But, you know, he obviously opts to take URI this cycle. And obviously he had – a ton of success at Dayton in the Atlantic 10 before he elected to leave to go to Coach Indiana. And I mean, URI is a similar program that has a lot of basketball history, you know, great resources, great facilities up there in Rhode Island, man. So I'm intrigued to see what he's going to be able to do in the Atlantic 10, man. I mean, the A-10 has some great, great coaches, man. And Archie Miller, obviously you mentioned Frank Martin was in the Final Four a couple of years ago. Obviously we raved about Kim English on this platform a bunch. Yeah, obviously the coaches that are already there, you know, in the A-10, the Mike Rhodes at VCU, man, and the list goes on and on. So I mean, the A-10 is going to be an absolute bear of a conference, man. And then on top of that, you're going to welcome in Little Chicago with Drew Valentine. So I think, man, Archie Miller definitely has his work cut out for him, man. But I think he's a guy who obviously has the pedigree to do so, man. And you know, he mentioned himself that, like, you know, he kind of took coaching for granted, just being a part of the sport. When he mentioned just kind of this year that he had to kind of reflect on it, he mentioned just kind of having that hunger back and that motivation back to really like be a part of something. You know, I think he's going to do a great job at URI and you know, rebuilding that program to prominence.
You know, I think you're right, man. I love the Archie Miller hire. I think obviously he ran that league when he was at Dayton, man, and obviously he was able to parlay that into the job at Indiana, man. But what he was able to do in that league was special, man. And obviously we know, you know, he has familiarity with the league. He's somebody who obviously is inheriting a program that, you know, is no stranger to success, man. And obviously with what Danny Hurley was able to do there, going into round of 32 and back-to-back years, I think, you know, he's inheriting a program that expects to win, man. He's somebody that's going to be extremely competitive, man. I think he's going to do a great job there, but You mentioned Prohm going back to Murray State, man, and obviously they're going to leave the OVC and head to the Missouri Valley. Great gift for the Missouri Valley because they're losing, obviously, to Chicago to the A-10. But, man, this dude, he has work cut out for him, man, because they lost their top three scorers. Like, obviously, Tevin Brown decided to declare for the NBA draft, and then KJ Williams and Juice Hill are both going over to LSU with Matt McMahon. I know Juice Hill is. I believe KJ Williams is going as well with him, but I know he entered the portal. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Prohm was able to reload there. Obviously, you know, they're going to be able to recruit at Murray State. You know, they're definitely no stranger to you know, success. And obviously, there are guys that are going to be – actually, I don't think KJ Williams has committed yet. As of yesterday, he's still the number three ranked transfer on evanmeyer.com, according to our guy that we had on last week's podcast. If you haven't already, tap into last week's episode with Evan Meyer, analytics guru, man. He has outstanding two that I'm currently looking at right now. And he has KJ Williams as a third ranked transfer on the market right now. So, but nonetheless, he has a workout for him over at Murray State, man. Obviously, we know the program is in a great place, and they've been able to you know, kind of recycle these guys through the years. Obviously, they had Cameron Payne, they had Isaiah Cannon, they had John Moran. It's you know, one up, one down, you know, so I'm sure Prohm will be able to get it going over there. He had it rolling before when he was there, so I look like you got something to say.
Yeah, I was about to say, I would say, though, I would rather be Prohm than Matt McMahon, because I think Juice Hill is, like, the only – I think LSU had, like, 11 players.
Oh, they have no returning players. Nobody.
Yeah, they have no returning – zero returning players. And he got Juice Hill in there, so he has, like, one dude on his roster right now. So,
yeah.
And with the sanctions and stuff that's getting ready to come up, I would much rather be Steve Prohm at Murray than Matt McMahon at LSU, man, because he literally has to build an entire 12-man roster.
Well, Andrew, I will say about that. Matt McMahon is going to make a lot of money at LSU. That football money is no joke. So that buyout is going to be hefty. And he's going to be able to sit on his behind for about, because they ain't going to fire him for the first 3 years, because I mean, you can't fire nobody coming in with allegations and all of this stuff. So he probably has at least 3, 4, 5 years to make 4 or 5 million a year. So I had to be anybody, not counting nobody's pockets, I would take the SEC money over there. I know they backed up the Brinks truck to get him to leave Murray State, because that place is the ultimate job security. You ain't getting fired from Murray State. So in order for him to leave there, I know they paid him quite heftily. So I won't go as far to say that I would rather be prone than Matt McMahon. I know Matt McMahon is going to be living large over there in Baton Rouge for the next couple of years.
Under a lot of stress, though.
Yes, he's going to be counting his money. He's going to be counting that bread.
A lot of stress, a lot of losses. It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad.
Yeah, man, listen, I'm sure he'll wipe his tear with a few $100 bills every night, you know what I'm saying, and cramps up to sleep, you know what I'm saying? Throw him at his wife when she get mad at him, you know what I'm saying? Hey, here, go back to a little Birkin or something. But we said we were going to dive into our local openings, man. We had two down years, man, here in the area, man. One very down year in University of Maryland, man, because they were a top 25 preseason team coming into this year, man. And obviously they didn't even make the tournament with one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. Just the year from hell, man, honestly. I mean, Turgeon quits about 5-6 games into the season, get an interim coach, Danny Manning, in there. And Bruce Shingler obviously gets in trouble with I don't even want to talk about what he did. If you haven't heard of it, just go ahead and Google it yourself, man, with that whole shindig went down. Obviously, they took Kudus Wahab out of the portal. That didn't work out. He's now back in the portal. And it was a bad year at the University of Maryland, man. We were people were getting booed in their own gym, man. Turgeon was getting booed. I mean, it was bad, man. It was a bad year in College Park, man. But they were able to hire Kevin Willard, man. And I am probably one of the people that is the highest on his hire of anybody, man. Cause I think Willard, man, I think he gets I won't say a bad rep, but you know, obviously he hasn't had a lot of success in the tournament, man. But people don't really realize how hard of a job Seton Hall is. Like we mentioned, talk about St. Peter's earlier, man. Take a drive up to Newark and go to Seton Hall. Drew, our campus at Quinnipiac makes it look like a high major compared to Seton Hall's campus, man. I mean, that place is I mean, if you look at my facilities, man, they're probably on par with like NEC. Some. I mean, their facilities are bad, bro. It's not great. But he was able to win at a high level there, man. Won a Big East regular season championship, won a Big East tournament championship there. Was the Big East coach of the year while he was there, man. And was able to have a lot of success, man. Put guys in the NBA. Obviously, Miles Powell was able to play in the league. Tandrew Mumu, because Kellers really hope I pronounced the name right. Pretty sure I did. Was able to play in the league. Isaiah Whitehead obviously played in the league, man. And Angel Delgado played in the league. I believe Desi Rodriguez played in the league.
He won a couple of G League 10-day exhibits, but I don't think he played in the
I think league. He might have to look a few games with the Clippers, I feel like.
He was in training camp. I'm not sure if he actually made the roster, though.
Nonetheless, man, I mean, he was able to have some success, man, at Seton Hall, man. And I think he's going to do a great job there at the University of Maryland. Obviously, he's famous for, you know, having very tough teams, great defensive teams, man. But, you know, in the last 2 years, man, he actually had some decent offenses, man. This year, they were 91st in offensive efficiency. But the year before that, last year, they were, you know, 51st in the country in offensive efficiency. The year before that, they were 29th in the country in offensive efficiency. The year before that, they were 87. But 2018, they were 17th in the country in offensive efficiency. So, you know, three of the last 6 seasons, you know, they had top 50 offenses in the country. So, you know, I think he's somebody that doesn't really get enough credit for the basketball coach that he is, man. I think he's going to be somebody that's going to be able to have success here. And we mentioned, obviously, his staff, starting with Grant Billmeyer, who's been with him at Seton Hall for 12 years. And they went and got David Cox, who was a former Rhode Island coach, DMV guy, strong ties to the area. And then they went out and got Tony Skin, who also has strong ties to the area, worked with Willard at Seton Hall. Both of those guys are you know, going to be, you know, have some pressure on them, man, because obviously the big thing with Maryland is can they get players, man? So, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Willard hire? How you think it's going to pan out? Obviously, there were a lot of talk about a lot of other candidates that potentially Maryland could or could not have gotten. But, you know, I guess in a broad scope, man, what are your thoughts on the Kevin Willard hire at University of Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said is correct, man. I think he's just a good basketball coach. Like, you know, he's a guy that, you know, can coach the game. He's not just a big name. He's not a guy who's, you know, a win the press conference type of guy, a flashy, you know, recruiter or anything like that. Like, he can actually coach the game of basketball, man, and get the best out of his players. I think a lot of people would honestly have a different perception of Kevin Willard if this COVID pandemic, if that COVID pandemic year in 2020 didn't end the season. People forget, I mean, Seton Hall was like a top five team in the country that year. Before COVID ended the year, I mean, they were in line to have like a number one or number two seed in the NCAA tournament that year. The year that Miles Powell was with a senior. So, I mean, imagine if they get a two seed in the tournament and then they make a run to a Sweet 16, Elite Eight, potentially a Final Four. I think people have a way, way, way different perception of Kevin Willard right now and this job, the job that he was able to do at Seton Hall. So I think that, you know, when you're coming into Maryland, especially given the year that they had this year and all the instability that they had as far as guys transferring and encouraging leaving mid-year, you need a guy who can kind of just steady things and kind of get you back to just playing good basketball. So I think, you know, Willard will do a good job in the Big Ten. Obviously, I think it's going to take a couple years just because of the fact that, you know, you don't really know what the roster is going to look like next year as far as, you know, Fast Russell and Eric Ayala leaving, you know, Kuzma Hall, like you mentioned, entering the portal. So I was going to have to do some roster rebuild, but I think, you know, he's going to get it rolling.
Yeah. So my question was going to be, do you think he can flip it, man? I mean, do you think he can turn it? And if so, like, how long do you think Maryland fans have to wait before they're, you know, top 25 team perennially and back in, you know, winning tournament games?
I mean, I say he could flip it in like 3 years. I think year one will be like rebuild. I think year two can be an improvement on year one. I think that they can maybe expect to be like a tournament team in year two. And I think by year three, I think they can be back in that like top 25 caliber program, you know, competing to actually make the second weekend in the NCAA tournament. And yeah, after that, I mean, anything beyond the second weekend is just luck at the end of the day, like, you know, getting a good matchup and, you know, getting hot at the right time.
Yeah. I think I do agree with you that next year is going to be tough because basically you're only going to be returning Hakeem Hart and Dante Scott, who played meaningful minutes, you know, on last year's team. Obviously, you mentioned losing Edgar Allen. I don't know if he's officially announced yet, but, you know, all times point to him leaving. Fast Russell, I think he's also all eligible. I don't even think he could come back if he wanted to come back. And obviously, we'll have him in the portal. Julian Reese is somebody who's going to be – I think he's going to potentially be an impact breakout star next year in the Big Ten. I mean, I got the chance to watch him all year, and that kid is – extremely high upside, man, for University of Maryland. So those three guys, I correct myself, with Juju played some meaningful minutes as well this year. I think he has potential to be, you know, one of the breakout players in the Big Ten next year. But I think in the area of the portal, man, like, you can turn stuff quick. Like, I don't expect them to be back in the tournament next year, but I think in year two, like, we should be expecting them to be back in the tournament, but just because of how quickly you can change things with the portal, man. I mean, if you strike on a few guys, and obviously, you know, now he's going to be able to, you know, this year coming in is going to be his first full recruiting class. Like, I think next year, 2023-2024, he could potentially be looking at a team that I think we should expect to be back in the tournament, man. I think Maryland is a place
I think year one rebuild, year two tournament, year three is when you could start talking about that, like, top 25 and second weekend team. I think that's my timeline for them.
Yeah. I think the portal this year is weird, man. I mean, you got a million names in it, but not really much motion. You know, there's not really much movement going on right now. I haven't heard about any recruits that are, you know, being recruited by Maryland. So I don't really know what's going on that front. But obviously, they just completed their staff. So I know those guys are probably not even sleeping at this point in time. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, man. But I have a lot of hope for the program, man. I had a chance to listen to the press conference, man. I was very excited with, you know, what they had to say. And I think the future of Maryland basketball is going to be looking bright. The other opening in DMV, man, GW, they were able to hire Chris Caputo. He's a friend of All Facts Media, man. He was our second ever interview back when we started our Coach's Corner segment, man. First was Dwayne Simpkins, who there were rumors that he was going to be able to join the staff at University of Maryland. He's obviously over on staff at George Mason with Kim English. And Chris Caputo, man, is going to be joining. He's going to be the head coach over at GW, man. And he has the work cut out for him, man, because obviously GW has had some hard years following them in recent memory, man. And, you know, obviously, Jamion, one thing I will say that he has some talent in there this year, man. Obviously, Joe Bamisil hitting for Virginia Tech. Obviously, he was able to get I'm thinking on this guy's name. Battle? No, Battle's at Minnesota. Bishop. James Bishop. At obviously GW. Obviously, he came from LSU. He those two guys have been awesome for him. Obviously, Brendan Adams was able to transfer that down there from UConn. So all three of those guys were impact transfers for him, man. And he did lose, I believe, Brian Freeman entered the portal. So that's going to be a big loss for them as a freshman because he had an outstanding year for them. Ira Lee obviously didn't even play this year, but he's not going to be returning to the team next year. And Rick Lindo was also in the portal. So losing Lindo, losing Brandon Freeman, I could be mistaken because there's a million names in the portal, but I haven't heard anything about Bama Steele, Brandon Adams, or James Bishop in the portal. So you can return those three guys, and that would be a great start as far as, you know, building for the future at GW. And hopefully, you know, obviously, like you said, man, the portal is a, you know, quick fix. Or if you missed, then it could elongate that process. So I think Caputo is going to have his work cut out for him. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that move for GW?
Yeah, I mean, I think you made a great point, man. I mean, Caputo's coming from Miami. And we just saw what Miami was able to do in terms of making the Elite Eight with Charlie Moore, Isaiah Wong, and Cameron McGusty, three extremely dynamic guards. So if Caputo is going to kind of try to bring that style that he's, you know, and that he's had under Larry Nankin for so long to GW, I mean, what better trio of guards to have that style with than James Bishop, Brendan Adams, and Joe Bamisil? I mean, if you could have those three guys in your backcourt and you play the way that Miami did as far as giving those guys freedom to play, I think that you're off to an amazing start, you know? I mean, obviously, we're D&D guys, man. I can't remember when the last time GW was in the tournament. And the one thing that Mike Lonergan did, man, was, like, he was able to get high-quality players in the GW, man. I mean, Patricio Guarino, Kevin Larson, Tyler Cavanaugh. Like, Tyler Cavanaugh is an NBA player. Like, these are the type of guys that were coming into the program for GW when the last were in the tournament. So I think if you're going to compete in the A-10, we already mentioned the lengthy list of coaches in the A-10 as far as Anthony Grant, Archie Miller, Mike Rose, Kim English right next door. Like, I mean, there's – I mean, Chris Mooney, I've just made a run to the second round. I mean, there's amazing coaches in the A-10, man. I mean, Mark Schmidt at St. Mary's. I mean, like so if you're GW, man, you're Chris Caputo, you're going to have your work cut out for you. But it's possible. You know, like I said, like we've seen GW – make a run to the tournament. I believe that was 2014, 2015, the last time they were in the tournament. I remember we were in high school.
It was the 2013-2014 season. GW was 24-9, and they earned a 9th seed in the tournament, and they lost to Memphis in the first round of that year's tournament.
Yeah, I mean, that's the caliber. I mean, getting a 9th seed in the NCAA tournament, that's not like you snuck in. I mean, those guys were solidly into the NCAA tournament. I mean, they had some great players on that team, man. I mean, like I said, we didn't even mention guys like Keaton Savage and Joe McDonald. Like, I mean, those were high major players that they had at GW. So, I mean, another thing that they did at Miami was use the portal. Like, obviously, McGusty was a transfer portal guy. Charlie Moore was a portal guy. So, I mean, if Chris Caputo can kind of bring that same style to GW where you're hitting the portal hard, you're bringing in talented players, man, then I think he'll have no problem kind of getting that thing rolling at GW, man. But like I said, man, his work is going to be cut out for him because the A-10 – I mean, it's going to be stronger than ever next year, especially when you welcome in Loyola Chicago.
You know, yeah, I think you're right, man. And obviously, you know, you mentioned it, the coaching in the A-10 is nuts. Obviously, with Mark Schmidt and Frank Martin and Archie Miller now, and it's going to be a bear, man, in the Atlantic 10. Now you mentioned Drew Valentine of Loyola Chicago, man. It's going to be a hell of a league. It's going to be a hell of a league to coach in. And but listen, man, we're in the DMV. The best players in America reside here. So I think the same thing that Maryland challenged to do, GW could be challenged to do. We haven't heard anything about the staff yet, but I'm sure Caputo is going to be able to get some guys on his staff. Shoot, I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if you would see maybe a guy like Dwayne Simpkins leave GW and leave Mason and go to GW to be with Caputo. Obviously, those guys, from what I've heard, are really close, but obviously he has something good over there at Mason with Kim English. So the staff is going to be important for Caputo, man. He's going to have some guys that – I'm going to be able to go out and get some players, man. But obviously, Caputo is young enough where he's going to still have some energy and some enthusiasm as far as getting on the recruiting trail and grinding and getting it in. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, man. Like I said, those are two programs with great history, obviously with GW and Maryland, both, you know, having you know, histories of success here in the area. And you're in, like I said, the best area of college basketball in the country, man. So, you know, we'll see what happens, man. I would definitely be intrigued to see, you know, how they handle those jobs. And, you know, hopefully we can get some good basketball here in the area next year. Because I know, obviously, George Mason, Kim English done a great job over there. Obviously, they're bringing in Justin Fernandez, top 100 kid. Devin Dinkins, who was a first-team All-Met guy at Gonzaga. Rich Adam, my guy from Tennessee. I'm blanking on his name right now, man. But he was, I believe, like their leading scorer, second or third leading scorer, two seasons ago at Tennessee, man, that year when they had Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer.
Obviously, this past year, when Kim Inglis left to take the Mason job, obviously it's tough when you're, you know, the assistant, you know, who recruited you kind of leaves. So, you know, we'll see. He's back with Kim Inglis now. George Mason, man, I'm gonna look at his name because I don't want to disrespect my guy, forgetting his name. But you know, they're gonna be obviously in year two. They're losing a lot. They're losing obviously Deshaun Schwartz. Is done with his eligibility. They lost a lot to the portal. Xavier Johnson entered the portal. They lost a lot. Obviously, they're going to bring back Josh Odoro, bring back Ticket Gaines, and then obviously they're bringing in a few freshmen that are very talented, and then a few transfers. I'm pulling up my guy's name right now so that I don't sound crazy disrespecting my guy. Victor Bailey Jr. He's coming to George Mason. He averaged 10.9 points per game at Tennessee in 2020-2021 season. So obviously he had a rough year last year, but he's somebody that if anytime you can average 11 points a game in the SEC with two first round draft picks on your team, you know, you're somebody that's definitely very talented. So kudos to Kim Inglis for keeping that Tennessee, the George Mason pipeline going on. Obviously he took Ticket Gaines last year and, you know, taking Victor Bailey this year. Obviously we're gonna, you know, see what he can do in year two at the helm in George Mason.
For sure, man. I think, you know, the last thing I'll say on the GW situation, man, is like, I think you mentioned it, man. The staff is going to be extremely important. I mean, I think Caputo just should take a page out of Kevin Willard's book, man, because, you know, he hired two DMV guys and, you know, a guy in David Cox, who is a great recruiter, has a great reputation for bringing players in. You know, he got a lot of credit for kind of really building up URI to what it was during Danny Hurley's tenure at URI, as far as bringing in players, you know, and getting a lot of those guys to URI. So he has a great reputation for being a recruiter. Man, I think he's going to be huge for Kevin Willard and kind of rebuilding that Maryland program and getting some of those local guys, you know, back into the fold at Maryland. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I know nothing has been confirmed, man, but we did hear that Lamar Butler and Brendan Strong are two guys that are rumored to be on Chris Caputo's staff at GW. So, I mean, and Brendan Strong is a team takeover guy. I believe Lamar Butler is also a takeover guy too, man. So, you know, if Caputo's if those two
Lamar are in fact coaching at PVI right now too.
Yeah, so I mean, if those two are in fact going to be on his staff at GW, man, he's moving in the right direction as far as getting some D&D guys into the program. And you can definitely expect, you know them to get some talented players in there over the next few years.
Yeah, man, you mentioned it, man. Look, if he's getting those two athletes, Lamar Butler was on that team at George Mason that went to the Final Four where Chris Caputo was an assistant coach on. So those two guys go way back to 2006 if they do, in fact, get that done and the other spot on the staff for him. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Auto Bid, man. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been a fun 2021-2022 season, man, and we're looking forward to the next one, man. Thank you to everybody who's followed along with our coverage, man. It's been, you know, an extremely fun year, you know, from the podcast to covering all these teams locally in the area and getting over the conference tournament, man. So thank you to everybody who's listening to this podcast, who has, you know, spread the word of the Auto Bid to a friend, to any member, family member. We greatly appreciate it, man. It does go a long way. We appreciate all the love and support that we are receiving here, man. If you haven't already, make sure you're following us on TikTok as well, man. We know we're on Twitter and Instagram at All Facts Media. Tap in with our TikTok. We got some fun content for you guys on there. Also, make sure you guys are obviously subscribing to our YouTube channel at All Facts Media. I'm getting ready to post some interviews on there. I'm coming up soon. So if you missed those, make sure you subscribe in there. Also, of course, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a like, give us a rating. Copy your merch, baby. Copy your merch. We got sweaters, we got hoodies. But we're doing a little promo right now. So if you're listening to this podcast, if you stayed around to the end, you have a chance to win some, to get some gear, man. So go ahead and head over to our website, man, and get yourself some merch. The link is in our bio. So make sure you guys are tapping in with that as well, man. And as always, make sure you guys tune in to my guy, Pull Up Tay's music. This is going to be him on the outro. Until next time, folks. You beating on me? It's time to get a check, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. I can tell. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take your last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.